Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's happening today?
Well, many of our listeners have joined us last night in our webinar. We had one of our series of webinars. This one was about the mediumship ability within us. And we had a panel of three certified mediums, Tracy Lee Nash and Neil Zapowski and Eliza Ray, and I'd like to, you know, thank them, you know, for the participation, and the feedback was pretty good. You know, I always pay attention to the questions because most of these, the time is allotted for questions and answers because, let's face it, a lot of people go to get medium readings and they're focused on the evidence, but they don't really get a chance to probe the medium's mind and get their feedback and on how they work and what their opinions are. So that's valuable. And I noticed, a question that comes up over and over again about mediums is whether or not mediums are born. Do you have to be born with that innate ability, or is it something that can be learned as any other skill? Or is it a combination of both? So I don't know if you... Now, when we talk to our certified mediums, there's a range of opinion on that.
Yeah, but I think even the range of opinion all comes back to the same thing. At some point in your life, you have not yet been indoctrinated into the physicality of the physical world. And therefore, you as a child, as a newborn, as an infant, as a toddler, however far it's going to take you before you get mummified by the physicality of material things around you, you are open to the unseen world and you can communicate with it and you can get guidance from it. We're just so young at that point, we can't express it. We assume that everybody's experiencing what we're experiencing, and then we grow up and we slowly get drawn away from it, never even having the opportunity to engage others in a, do you remember when you were three? And so as we get older, we forget what happened when we were three and four and five. It's just so far away. But if there were some sort of ongoing conversation that parents who are well educated in the philosophies of the unseen world and the single consciousness would engage their children at an early age, I think you would see a lot little different conversation about the same topic 20 years from now.
Yeah. Well, I used to kind of bristle at the notion, you know, when people say that we're all mediums, because I don't believe that. You know, I think that we all have some degree, varying degrees, all over the map of intuitive ability. And you mentioned one reason for it. Maybe that's because we ignore it, you know, we don't acknowledge it, but nonetheless, some spark is there. But I think it's sort of, look, I remember back when I was in elementary school, and they were recruiting people for the school band. So what did they do, which is the most ridiculous thing, is they gave you a written test, a written music test. So I was good at taking tests, so I got a good grade on the test. So they said, okay, you're in the band. And then they proceeded to try me on different instruments, and much to their dismay, I was horrible. I was horrible at everything every instrument I picked up. And I practiced. I took, you know, my mother and father gave me lessons. I took lessons on the saxophone. I took lessons on the trombone. I took lessons on the clarinet. I tried, but I just could not. I mean, there I would say is that I really have had little or absolutely no musical, born musical gift. And no matter how much I practiced, I mean, maybe I could have gotten to the point where I was average, but certainly I couldn't be, wouldn't listen to me play and say, boy, you were born to play that instrument.
Well, I think Neil Zapowski brought that up last night during the webinar, and I think his example was very good, and I think all three of them kind of chimed in on the same thing. We use the example here a lot, too. You know, you can learn how to play the piano, and you could play very, very well. But if it is not your pathway to go to Carnegie Hall, you're not going there. So we understand from a spiritual aspect that we're all here for some bigger purpose. And if that purpose includes being musical, then you've got the quote-unquote gift or the quote-unquote talent to take that music to whatever level you need to take it to on that particular pathway. And I think that's why when you say we're not all mediums, and some people say we are all mediums, it's because there's no real definition of what a medium is, as there is no real definition of what a musician is.
Right. And you can be a personal medium and not a public medium or a professional medium.
Right, and I think that's the dangerous part that people don't want to understand. And I think our three mediums were trying to make that point last night, is that mediumship is not something to be taken lightly. You are dealing with people very often who are on the edge, and you can help them or you can hurt them. So it's a huge responsibility that goes along with it. Yeah, you can learn how to do it, but should you be doing it professionally? That's the huge question everybody has to ask.
Yeah, and you mentioned Neil Zapowski last night, and you're right. He differs from many of the other stories we've heard from mediums. I think an overwhelming majority talk about having very significant after-death communications while they were young, you know, anywhere from 3 years old to, you know, right on up to their teen years. And Neil described not so much, you know, that he took an interest in it and was able to...
But he took an interest in it as a skeptic. That's what was so interesting about his story,
yeah,
is that he went in there saying, this could not possibly be.
Right. And we are going to have a medium convention in November, for those of you who have not had a chance to register. You can find that information. Some of the mediums, two of the mediums that were in the webinar last night will be there, Eliza Ray and Neil Zapowski. And it's a whole range of activities planned. There's not only general presentations, but there's relatively small workshops people will be broken into by their interest. And when I say by their interest, some people are coming because they have intuitive ability and they want to develop that. Some are actually practicing mediums. Some are just curious about it. Some are bereaved and are looking to make a connection, and there will be, you know, spirit communication. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, it's right on the event page of our website. Just go to forfamilyfoundation.org.
And it's just going to be a marvelous, marvelous weekend and experience for everyone, because never before has there been an entire weekend that is run by our certified mediums, taught by our certified mediums. I mean, they're going to be conducting spirit communication. You're going to be totally surrounded by mediumship in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah, it's a departure from all of our other, big, conventions and conferences, because this is focused all on mediumship and not on the science. Not that the science is not important.
But we will have one scientific presentation.
Right. We're going to go to a break. We have a wonderful guest coming up, Dr. Stafford Betty. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
It's our pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stafford Betty. He's been a professor of religious studies at California State University in Bakersfield for about 40 years now, I guess.
I'm afraid it's up. It's true.
He's considered to be a world expert in afterlife studies. He's authored 7 books and published in numerous scholarly journals and the popular press. In his latest book, When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying, and I love the title, Dr. Betty addresses not only the well-known areas of survival research, but maybe some other forms of evidence of life after death that are not often discussed. Stafford is a member of Forever Family Foundation's Academic Advisory Board. He lectures frequently on the subject of life after death. He teaches a course at the university on death and the afterlife. And, of course, his other main interests include the philosophy of religion, paranormal studies, spirituality, mysticism, and the mind-body problem. Welcome back to Signs of Life, Stafford, and it's a pleasure to speak with you again.
Great to be here, Bob. It's always a delight to be with you and with Fran.
Thank you. You know, I'll start right off. I mentioned the title, When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? Afterlife
right.
Evidence. And right off the bat, when I read your intro, you said something that got me thinking. You mentioned that some of your university colleagues assume that your interest in the afterlife comes from your own disappointments in life.
Right.
Why do you suppose that is? Do you think that people assume that it's only those who seek to escape from the burdens of physical life that contemplate a world beyond it?
That's exactly right. That's exactly what the people that I've heard with these opinions think of me. It strikes me very strangely because I think of myself as being considerably happier than at least those folks, you know. And I really am a fairly brilliant personality precisely because I am so sure that this is not the only life there is. I'm not suffering under that rather dismal worldview that makes everything turn dark at death or when one approaches death. And so this is a curse that many of my colleagues have to live with, and they seem to be quite content to do it. But I think it really takes something out of them.
Well, you know, they say misery loves company, so
I think that's true. I think I'm somewhat resented for my optimism, if anything, and therefore they have to find a good excuse for it.
Right. Well, that either that or they just assume you're on Prozac or something.
I don't know what it is, but I'm not. Let me assure you.
Yeah, I know you're not. So, I guess the million-dollar question is, why is it important for us all to recognize a non-physical realm? A lot of people will say, and we hear it too. Well, that's not for us to contemplate. We'll just live for today. So, how do you answer that if a student poses you with that question?
You know, my wife and I took a vacation to Hawaii, to the Big Island, about a month ago, and I spent quite a bit of time researching that destination. And just imagine how much more important it is to research the inevitable universal destination of death. How could you be so uncurious about such a reality? We're so curious about lesser realities, and we do all this research for things that just come and go, and yet the really big question is not studied. I don't get it. I want to know about what I'm headed for. It seems to me that that has a lot to do with the way I lead my life right now.
Yeah. Well, I think you just hit on that. A lot of people want to know that there's some sort of afterlife justice or karma, and that's, perhaps that's the real reason that it's so important for us, because if we live in a world where there, death is final and there are no, repercussions, then why not abuse people and collect toys and travel?
Right. Yeah. Right, and just live selfishly. I mean, if Hitler and Mother Teresa go to the same destination, we're living in an absurd world, and that's a world that I would prefer not to have been born into. It's a stupid world. It's a preposterous world, and it's something that should never have happened. All of the evidence that I have indicates that that is not the way things are at all. And I reached a point of complete certainty about that after all the years of research that I've done. It seems to me that the evidence is simply overwhelming in favor of the reality of an afterlife. So that's not something I worry about anymore. The only thing I worry about is leading the kind of life that one is expected to lead, an honorable, good, honest life that we're all called to do and that we'll be rewarded for and punished in some way if we don't.
And in the new book, you know, When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying, as I mentioned, you get into a lot of the evidence. What do you think has a better chance of eventually changing worldview about death? Is it religion or is it psychical research?
It's not religion. Religion has already demonstrated its failure,
right,
at least in the West. In the East, I'm not so sure. My suspicion, though, that all over the world, religion is losing the race pretty quickly to secularism. And the alternative to that is psychical research, because that's where the evidence, the scientific evidence, is to be found. So if you're uncomfortable with a world, with a worldview that is purely secular and purely physicalistic, and you're done with religion, the only place you can look anymore, and this has always been the best place to look, incidentally, is psychical research. And that covers an awful lot of ground. Very exciting material, and that's what my book is about.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious that, you know, your purpose in writing the book is to educate people, you know, about the evidence and hopefully help to remove reasonable doubt about life after death. And you start off with what I personally feel is the most compelling of all the evidence, and that's deathbed visions. And and you point out why they can't be explained away as hallucinations. You also mention what some would consider to be an astonishing coincidence in our history. I mean, the connection between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I can. I'm not sure I can be very specific with the facts.
Right.
The date was July the 4th, 1826. Exactly 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and of course both of these American heroes, John Adams, the second president, and Jefferson, the third president, were there. They were signatories, and they happened both to die on the exact 50th anniversary of that event. They died within 4 hours of each other, and about 3 hours after Jefferson's death, and just before Adams was dying, Adams had a vision of Jefferson, a deathbed vision. That's what the evidence points to. And the last thing Adams said, was, "Thomas Jefferson survives." And that's because Jefferson paid him a last-minute visit just 3 hours after he himself had died.
Right.
And an hour later, Adams would die himself.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and
it is.
Sometimes the most logical explanation is the real explanation.
Right.
He saw him, and then he just, you know, he said he survived. He saw the evidence, so that's great.
And one other thing I should mention is that they lived about 5 or 6 days apart by horseback and carriage. There was no way that one could have known of the other. There's no ordinary physicalistic explanation for how this happened.
Yeah.
But it did. We know that. It's well documented in all of the biographies of Adams.
It's real interesting. The thing that fascinates me most about deathbed visions is that once you can rule out the medical explanations, and clearly in a majority of cases you can.
Yes, indeed.
The only thing left, then, is a spiritual explanation. And the implication is that we do indeed have assistance when our time comes to cross over. I mean, you agree with that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let me just read the 7-line introduction to the chapter on deathbed visions, just to make it clear exactly what we're dealing with to our audience. Imagine yourself standing at the bedside of your grandmother, who is very near death. Suddenly, she begins to talk in a faint voice to someone she sees in the room, but you don't see. She tells you that her father, long deceased, is over there. Don't you see him? You look where she is looking, but of course you can't. "Oh, he's come to take me away," she says while smiling. her emaciated arms reaching out to the phantom. She seems uncommonly alert, almost excited. That's a typical deathbed vision.
Yeah, it's, you know, and the thing about it is that's so unfortunate is that, you know, much of the medical community remains hush-hush about it. I mean, it's well known, you know, in hospice and with emergency care workers and so forth. And as a matter of fact, they know that death is near when that happens.
Exactly so. It's very common.
Yeah, but yet they are reluctant to talk about it in public outside of for obvious reasons, fear of being judged and
that's it. That's it exactly. There's no other reason for it, and it is a shame. Doctors carry a lot of clout, and if they would come out occasionally, as one voice, they can make a real difference in the world. But as you say, only a very few of them dare write about it, and they put their they put their diplomas at risk, so to speak.
Yep. You also go into the evidence of near-death experiences, and we don't have to get into all of the evidence, but, you know, I guess one of the most compelling aspects of the near-death experience, as you pointed out, is the if it were simply the product of an impaired brain, why would hallucinations have such a transformational effect on the lives of those who had them? I mean, is that
right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's exactly right, Bob. There are cases in which people seem to have left their body for some kind of artificial reason. For example, if they're training for the Air Force and they are put in a giant centrifuge, some of the pilots, just before passing out, talk about having left their bodies. But it is never transformational. It's probably a purely artificial lift off from the body by the spirit, after a few seconds, it's implanted back in. But there are no resonating, life-changing features in those rare events that are reported in such manner. So something decidedly different is going on when people meet the being of light, feel immersed in it, and have their lives utterly changed.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And also clear thinking at a time that you should not be able to think clearly.
Exactly. Thinking and perceiving and just feeling is greatly elevated. Yeah,
right.
It's as if you have thrown off, and this is the way they sometimes talk about it, you have thrown off the dense physical brain. You're living out of some other brain, as it were, maybe your astral brain. But in any case, you're seeing with greater clarity than you ever did before. You know, your IQ is up to 300, where it was 140 before, perhaps. And it's just a great event that these people report back, especially those who have been immersed in the loving knowingness of the being of light.
Right.
Something extraordinary is going on, something profoundly spiritual and life-changing forever.
Mm-hmm. So you're teaching your class, and here you are, you're an esteemed professor, and the student raises his or her hand and says,
yeah.
Dr. Betty, do you believe in ghosts? How do you answer?
My answer is always, you know, that's an unsavory word to many of you, but I'm afraid that I do, and the reason is that the evidence makes it very clear that ghosts or apparitions, as they are more respectably called sometimes, are just part of our world. They've been reported in all cultures down through the ages, and about 45% of Americans, the least likely to believe in ghosts, believe in them anyway. And one of the reasons is that they've read books like mine, or they've seen something on the History Channel, or many of them in my classes finally come out and say, you know, I have seen a ghost myself. Or, I feel my aunt. She lives with us in our house. We all think she's with us. And there are many, many cases in the literature of ghosts that have been seen by more than one person simultaneously, and even ghost conversations. All of this is in the literature. It's been out there for 150 years to read, And there's just, if you don't believe in ghosts, you simply haven't done your homework. That's what I tell them.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the ghosts are, you know, the term is kind of filtered by the media influence.
Yeah,
you know?
It is, unfortunately. So that's why we use the word apparition.
Right, or seeing your loved one, you know. And also this fear that's instilled, you know, into us. A lot of people say, well, if I could only see my deceased loved one, then I would believe. And then one day they see, and I say, well, how did it feel? I said, well, I was afraid. It's something that you asked for, and you were given that gift, and then you know, the fear just doesn't make sense. And I think that's part of changing worldview. You know, I mean, it should be welcome instead of
it absolutely is because of the worldview that they have. They are spooked out when they see a spook. And if they lived in India or in many other third world countries, they would be unsurprised. I wouldn't say they'd be unsurprised, but they wouldn't be spooked. They wouldn't be frightened. They would understand what it was, and they would feel privileged to have seen such a visitor.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit while we're talking about ghosts and apparitions about, you know, poltergeist phenomena. Now, When I embarked upon my own research of paranormal phenomena, and I interviewed many on the subject of the poltergeist, it was made very clear to me that such activities were clearly the result of RSPK, you know, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, and it's traced back to an emotionally charged adolescent in most cases who resided in the house, you know, where the activities were occurring.
Yeah, right.
You know, I remain open to the theory, and I believe that in some occurrences it's the most logical explanation, but it cannot account for every circumstance.
Not even close.
What do you think?
Not even close. I don't personally believe RSPK exists except in the laboratory, where very small changes in the physical environment can be registered and measured with instruments. I think everything else is caused by some kind of a spirit who is present. What's really amazing and what just completely baffles the skeptics who resort to RSPK is the recent collection of experiences recorded on surveillance cameras. They're available online. CCTV, it's called. Surveillance cameras, you know, they're just always on. And every now and then they catch poltergeist activity, and you can see it right there. You can see furniture being moved around. You can see dishes and cups being, as it were, lifted off of the shelf where they were and then dropped. They don't just sort of, you know, wobble off. They're lifted off and then dropped. You don't see the lifter, of course, because that would be the spirit. But how anyone can after seeing this kind of evidence, not to mention all the other evidence that is rather earth-shaking, the best of it, and come away with the belief that RSPK explains everything is completely beyond me. I just don't think that such people are capable of getting beyond the threshold of, I don't know, knee-jerk reaction belief.
Yeah, you know, when I first, you know, heard about that, I mean, I really wanted to witness that. I said, you know, to me that would be even more amazing than after death contact. You know, education to have by the power of the mind have 200-pound pieces of furniture flung across the room.
Right.
You know, that is pretty amazing in and of itself, right?
Right.
Like you say,
and all of that is very well documented. It's not as if, you know, some quack put this together. It's extremely well documented. Going way back to the latter part of the 19th century, when the great heyday of psychical research, and one of the most recent poltergeist outbreaks occurred in between 1989 and 1992, and was observed by one of England's best parapsychologists. I mean, he didn't just take notes; he actually went to the place and observed it many, many times. Extraordinary poltergeist phenomena. And, of course, he knew everything about how to search out and smell out any possible collusion or trickery. So, you know, the literature is full of this stuff, and if you don't want to believe in it, I guess you just don't read it.
Yeah, but, absolutely. But, you know, and I know we're going to go to a break, but when we come back, okay. You mentioned in the book and in quite a bit of detail about an investigation that you conducted many years ago. Maybe when we come back from break, you tell us a little bit about that. We're talking with Dr. Stafford Betty. The book is called When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? Afterlife, the Evidence. Stay with us. There's lots more to come. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. We ask our listeners to please check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And we want to send a big thank you to Dr. Neil Zapowski, Tracy Lee Nash, and Eliza Ray, three wonderful Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, for their superb webinar last night, The Medium Potential Within Us All. Our first annual mediumship convention is all set for the weekend of November 11th through 13th, and this is another first of its kind, a convention totally dedicated to the world of mediumship. Run by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, taught by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, and spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Reservations can be made on our website, and as always, please keep in mind our no-refund policy before making your reservations. And our Holidays Past raffle is up and waiting for your entries to support the great work of our 100% volunteer organization. Win up to 5 medium readings in our drawing set for December 23rd. The mediums in this year's raffle are Catherine Nadal, Heidi Jaffe, Tracy Lee Nash, Renata Santarelli, and Lee Ashley. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo. Just make sure you name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Stafford Betty. We're talking about his new book, When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? Half-Life, the Evidence. Stafford, before the break, I kind of teased that, you know, you had conducted your own investigation. I think somewhat reluctantly you were called in. It was a while ago, but can you give us, I know it's kind of lengthy, but a little overview of what you found?
Right. I'll make it really quick as I can. It was the only field work I've ever done, and it turned out to be an extraordinarily interesting, even remarkable case of poltergeist outbreak. It happened just a couple of miles away from my campus, and I got a call from somebody who knew I was interested in psychical research. She had a friend who had poltergeist outbreak apparently in her home. And she asked if I could help. Well, I did help. I rang up some friends whom I knew to be sensitive. We came over there, and basically, very quickly, within about 3 hours, I would say, we did away with the poltergeist. And the whole story is remarkable because the poltergeists were actually living in the house. They'd been there for at least 4.5 years. We were able to conclude who they were. And it turned out that the person who, the lead poltergeist, there were three spirits living in the house, and one of them, the main one, had been the previous owner of the house and had loved that house. And after she died, the house had not been lived in for 4.5 years, except by her and her two friends. All right? And when the living owner finally bought this property, she was received with great hostility from the very moment she walked into the house. And within 2 months, she put the house up for sale again and just wanted to leave because of the horrifying things that she was being harassed by. And in any case, to make a long story short, my friends and I were able to exorcise the, I don't know if that's the right word, exorcise the spirits. And the woman was able to take to keep the house, and she learned to love it again, and she lived there happily thereafter until she died. So it's full of remarkable poltergeist activity. What makes it remarkable is that in most cases you cannot decide who or what the poltergeist was, but in this instance it was a woman who had died about the age of 70 and continued to live in what she thought was her home, and she greatly resented the intruder who bought it and tried to live in it.
Mm. So clearly, there, you know, a lot of people have earthly attachments when they
oh, yes.
when they first, you know, cross over. But fortunately, there are many opportunities to move on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Happens. But that was it. This woman was what we call, an earthbound spirit. I think that's the key word these days. She was just an earthbound. She was bound to the house that she loved. She was not ready to die when she did. She died rather suddenly. Very materialistic sort of person, I was able to find out. And we knew exactly who she was by the time the research had been done and why she was there and what finally prevailed on her to leave. Fascinating case. And it's been written up in the Society, in the Journal for the Society for Psychical Research.
Yeah, and you do go into great detail in your book.
In my book, yeah. Right. That's I devote probably 12 pages to that case since I know it so well.
Yeah. You know, it's one area. You also spend quite a bit of time in the book talking about the implications of spirit possession, you know, or attachment. And I kind of dismissed that over the years probably because, you know, I've witnessed so many medium readings, and they rarely, if ever, talk about, when I say they, the mediums rarely, if ever, you know, talk about, you know, evil or malintentioned spirits. But after reading what you had written, and there are some implications, you know, that maybe what we constantly classify as mental illness, there might be a physical explanation, you know.
Yeah, I'm convinced that there is in many cases. I suspect that our madhouses are filled with sad cases of people who've been just thrown away and left to rot in those places, except, you know, they're given heavy, heavy doses of medication and just given up on. And I think that so many of these are probably there are many kind of dark spirits who are enjoying or suffering through or whatever you want to say the bodies of these beings and essentially possessed the bodies and taken them over for their own. The case for this is just overwhelming as you begin to look at it, and it is the one chapter in my book I wish I didn't have to write, Bob. It is It's not anything that we want to believe, but the evidence is overwhelming. Not only are we seeing cases that are arising in our own culture, in American culture, places like Gary, Indiana, an extraordinary outbreak of possession 4 years ago, but these cases have long been talked about and described in third world countries. Where possession is just almost taken for granted. So I think it's something that is indicative of the reality of spirits. And after all, that's my whole purpose in writing this book, is to present the evidence for the reality of spirit life beyond this. And that's just one of the 9 chapters that, and it's the one dark chapter. The other 8 are all very encouraging, positive. But this one is not so positive, but it does strongly indicate the reality of survival of death.
Mm. You had an interesting quote in the book from Gandhi, which I had never read, you know, because it was, I believe, in the chapter we were discussing reincarnation.
Yeah, it was.
Gandhi said reincarnation, you know, well, it was something to the effect that it's a great mercy.
Yeah,
and he asked, you know, that we should imagine why God didn't give us one long earth life versus many shorter lives.
Right.
Remember his explanation, and does it make sense to you?
Absolutely, it does. So many people ruin their reputations in the course of a lifetime. They make serious mistakes, and there's almost no way that they can redeem their reputations. They just need to start over again. And they're given a chance to start over again when they die and then come back. The slate is not wiped clean, of course, because they have their karma, but their karma is private to them. It's not known by anyone else. So even though they have to live with their past lives, they are at least publicly, they're safe from the public eye. and they can begin again to do things differently and to live better. And I think that's why God invented this very strange way of having us march through life after life after life with clean starts every chance.
So if we make a mess out of our short life, there's hope.
Yeah, there's plenty of hope, and many of us do make messes. And Gandhi saw that with great clarity, and I thought that was one of the most interesting insights I ever got from him.
Another form of evidence that you discuss is, instrumental transcommunication.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And some of the evidence is quite compelling. Do you think that the people in spirit, on where they are, they also need help and practice to be able to transmit voices and images to the physical world, similar to the way mediums might work on this side of the veil?
Exactly. That's what they tell us. They are trying to get through to us without using a medium. They want to use electronic instrumentation. But it's not easy for them to do that. It's a lot easier to communicate to us through a living spirit, that is to say, through a physical medium. After all, a physical medium is essentially a spirit incarnated, but still a spirit. So it's spirit-to-spirit communication. But when you're trying to communicate through electronic equipment, that's a heck of a lot more difficult from the spirit's vantage point. And they talk about how difficult it is for them to use this means. They want to cooperate with us because they know that we're very interested in having them communicate with us in any way they can, and in particular in a manner that might just hold a certain amount of respect from the scientific community because technology is being used. And they talk about developing stations on the other side where they study and experiment with the various means of communicating through electronic instruments. And some are doing better than others. There are some sites or stations, they call them, that have been recognized by people down on our side as particularly fruitful.
And you mentioned, there's so much information to discuss, and unfortunately not a lot of time, but I know you cited the work of Annabella, Cardoso,
and
she gets quite a bit of lengthy communications by direct radio voice. So
unlike
EVP, some of the messages are lengthy. And she was told by people in spirit that they're not allowed to reply to some questions, which implies that information that we are given access to is maybe limited by design. Do you believe that?
Well, that's what they say, and it's hard for me to disagree with something that comes from such a source. I can imagine that we're not supposed to be privy to everything that goes on over there. If we were, it might be conducive to too many suicides. And it may well be that that's behind these warnings that we get from some spirit communicators working through Annabella Cardoso. I should mention that there are three means by which spirits communicate using instruments. One of them is by the radio signal, and that's the way Cardoso works. But also, spirits have been communicating to us through phone calls. And finally, by computers and television sets. So there are those three different means of communication.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's people are very intrigued because now there's evidence that they can perceive with their known physical senses. So as evidence, it's extraordinary. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We have been talking with Dr. Stafford Betty. It's an excellent book, When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? Afterlife, the Evidence. He goes into many of the things we talked about, including the chess match among mediums and terminal lucidity and a lot more. So pick up the book. It's highly recommended. Stafford, the best way people get in touch with you, is just to Google Stafford Betty and your university website comes up and they can learn more. Correct?
Sure, absolutely. I welcome communication from. I'm not overwhelmed by it quite yet. I can usually get back individually to anyone who writes me.
Okay.
So I'm happy to do that, Bob, by all means. By the way, when did you ever become less by dying is a quote from a poem by Rumi. Wonderful poem.
Well, I didn't know that. Thanks for being with us tonight, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Bob. Been delightful. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Trevor McKinney, Alex Hanna, Karen Gould, Stanley Newland, Glenna Irwin, Michael Tim, David Hayes, Marianne Pierzga, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Fred Feinstein, James Rafferty, Doreen Malloy, Diane Archangel, Joan Lipke, Isabel Ginsburg, and Vince Mataya. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.